You've probably been hearing, talking, and thinking about one particular bathroom item a little more than normal lately.
Getting, 100 rolls of toilet paper, that really didn't make a whole lot of sense.
Welcome to Marketing Murder Mysteries. I'm your host, Michael Graham. Joining me as usual is the team of Millennium Agency. Hello, Linda Fanera, CEO and Chief Strategist.
Hello, Michael Graham.
And Rob Atkinson, Managing Director, also known as the Quicker Picker Upper at Millennium Agency. Rob?
Any job that needs to be done, call me.
Advertising and marketing pros see it all the time. Brands getting killed in the marketplace, sometimes due to their own miscalculations, sometimes by events beyond their control, and sometimes it's by their own success. This week, we're going to look at brands like Tylenol, Charmin, and Clorox. Sales for these products have been through the roof since the start of the pandemic. But soaring demand may be a curse for these brands. Stores can't keep these products in stock. Not surprisingly, consumers are getting angry, which only hurts the brand. You're going to hear the case from our marketing detectives, and then you can hand down your own verdict. Marketing during the pandemic, how success could kill Charmin's brand. First, it was disinfectant wipes. Then it was toilet paper. Consumers, driven by fear and uncertainty, began preparing for a long shelter in place. And the more the items disappeared off the shelves, the more panic buying set in and the more angry customers got at major brands like Charmin. Linda, from a marketing perspective, what can these companies do to mitigate consumer backlash?
Well, first of all, I do want to say it was last weekend was the first time that I went into a grocery store and was actually able to purchase toilet paper. So can you believe that to this day, I was not able to actually find a store that had it in stock.
So I'm going to start stalking you to figure out where you're finding toilet paper, because I still haven't seen any.
So you guys want to know the secret where all the toilet paper is?
Do we have to go Staples in the morning, Rob?
No, Staples. You could go to Staples. They have rows and rows of it.
You know, that's what's so funny is I went to Staples and I took a photo of the empty toilet paper shelves.
You're kidding.
No,
the
I'm
one
not kidding.
The one by me is full, is stocked.
Okay, really? Well, now I know. But seriously, Linda, what does this mean when people show up to buy their, it's their product, it's what they buy, whatever the brand is, and it's not there?
Right. So that's a problem. So a lot, we had talked about this in a prior podcast where, does it really make sense for these big brands to run ads on their toilet paper or their Lysol or any of these products that they cannot get their hands on? No, it doesn't. Does it make sense for those brands to develop a message that maybe incorporates their brand and is empathetic toward the coronavirus? Yes. And I don't know if either one of you two have seen the Tylenol commercial, but it was just a great commercial around Tylenol, and it touched on the coronavirus. And I think they did a really nice job sort of illustrating their empathy toward this, but while also getting their brand name out, which is key. I mean, that particular TV spot is embedded into my mind right now. So does it make sense to run huge ad campaigns with products that you can't get your hands on? No. But does it make sense to run an ad campaign for products that, they're looking at increasing sales on? Yes, absolutely.
So, Rob, this is a sign of how my wife controls my life entirely. But the channels that she watches that for some reason involve lots of people who are on 90-day date things and reality TV and Honey Boo Boo and whatnot, there are a lot of ads featuring cartoon bears with toilet problems. And these ads are on all the time, and I'm thinking the same thing that Linda just mentioned. What are you doing, Average? I literally can't find your stuff.
Yeah, I think that is a problem. Plus, the retailers aren't doing them any favors either. I did a little bit of research, and I found out that one store is advertising hand sanitizer, for example, at $60 a bottle. On Amazon yesterday, I saw a package of toilet paper for $50. So, it really does make you angry when you see this price gouging. And not necessarily the problem from Charmin's point of view, because they're trying to get their product out to the marketplace, but it certainly damages the brand. And what we just talked about with Staples, for example, I think is the perfect example. I found it at mine. You didn't at yours. Automatically, you have a negative feelings towards Staples and probably Charmin because you can't find the stupid toilet paper there when it was there last week. I, on the other hand, had a great experience. I went there, I found it, and I bought some. So, you know, that's the problem that's facing these brands right now, and running these commercials with dancing animated bears for toilet paper, I agree with you, it's just ridiculous.
You know, what? I don't know if you saw the last, it was actually in Newsweek, and it was pretty funny. In fact, this man in Australia bought $10,000 in toilet paper and hand sanitizer, and then he decided, okay, now that it's back on the shelves, that he wants a refund. And the director of the supermarket, they're like, no, I don't think so. We're not giving you back your refund. You bought $10,000 of hand sanitizer and toilet paper. No. I've also read about different articles where people have bought this up and tried to resell it on other, you know, websites to generate a tremendous profit during this, you know, pandemic. And it just honestly doesn't make any sense to me.
So, Rob, what are we seeing data-wise when it comes to Amazon's sales of these staples?
Well, Nielsen, which measures all sorts of consumer products, recently came out with a report that it said that 60% toilet paper sales rose 60% in the week ending March 7th. And it's led to higher prices too. In fact, prices jumped about almost 9% in the week ending March 8th. So, you know, clearly it's having an impact because, you know, sales are rising and prices are rising. And plus you have a supply problem too. These companies are having a terrible time getting their product to market, strangely enough. So it's really a three-sided problem that they've got to overcome.
From February 20th to March 23rd, Amazon sales of toilet paper increased 186% year to year, according to analytics from Commerce IQ. They also found that sales of cough and cold medicines grew by 862% year to year. Children's vitamins by 287%. But the number that you left off your data, Rob, booze. I want to know how much booze is selling. I'm guessing it has lots of zeros before the percent.
Well, you know, not only people drinking more, but I got to say they're making it so much easier for us. Now there's just curbside pickup to get your booze. I mean, that is awesome. I mean, I hope that never ends. This is a, you know, I think that they should keep that forever.
And it shows you, Linda, how some industries have a supply chain that can handle, you know, relative, you know, shocks to the system, and others don't, because it's not just toilet paper. As was mentioned earlier, you had disinfectant wipes, and they're still very hard to find, cleaners, et cetera. And so, Mike, I guess my question is, if you got the phone call from Procter & Gamble or whoever, and they said, what should our message be as the corona lockdown starts to wind down and people are looking up again? What should our message be to our consumers who were unable to buy our product when they wanted to, you know, a week, a month, 6 weeks ago?
Yes. So supply chain was a tremendous, you know, issue around some of these things. And if the supply chain has actually loosened up and they're able to stock the shelves that are, you know, currently out there and move product into the stores that they need to, you know, communicating that message is not a problem. I mean, honesty is the best policy, and people are smart. They know if you're being authentic and if you're not. And, you know, advertisers can sometimes be a little, you know, on the edge of how they may communicate. But I would say, yes, why not explain that some of these things are back on the shelf? I did want to mention, though, which is kind of cute, I think, is the Smucker company that sells the peanut butter. Their sales, which I the reason I think it's cute is because peanut butter is one of those little staples that remind you of when you were just a kid. And their demand has gone up substantially in sales. And I do want, and I know a lot of these children are home now because they're being homeschooled. And they're probably depending on peanut butter versus the school lunch program. But it is kind of interesting how that's a brand that's really increased in, you know, in market share during this pandemic.
Rob, do you think there's a value if you were one of the brands that was able to keep places stocked. Maybe you figured out the supply chain earlier. Maybe you were, quite frankly, a less well-known or, you know, less popular brand. And so you were, you know, once the other stuff got cleared out, you were there. Is that something that you would market on post-coronavirus? Or do you think that the marketing approach should just be that, you know, that was then, this is now, let's focus on the future, as President Trump would say?
No, I think you definitely use like, you know, man on the street interviews to say that every time I needed something for my family, I could go into store X and it was always there for me at a great price. I think that type of advertising is going to be gold. I have actually a question for Linda. Is that, do you think that, what should the brands do, like Charmin, do for the stores that took advantage and price gouged the consumer? So do you think that there should be some type of marketing directed at the stores, or do you just ignore that altogether and don't try to bite the hand that feeds you?
I think it may backfire because obviously they depend on these stores to sell their products. So I think that could potentially backfire if they were to take a loud action against these stores that have increased prices because of that reason. But I think there's other ways that they could handle that directly with some of these other retailers and distributors or whoever the case may be. So I'm not sure that I would go directly at them. I don't know that it would work to their benefit. Particularly, you have to look at the perspective of, let's say, Walmart, you know, raises their prices for one reason or another. Well, there's millions and millions of people that absolutely love that brand, and they may love that brand more than they love the Charmin brand. So they're putting themselves at a risk when they do that.
I have one last question, and it's about the brand perception of how it handled the coronavirus separate from in the retail stores. For example, a lot of brands are running ads about how they are giving things away. They're raising money for people who are suffering. They're, you know, finding PPE and delivering it to hospitals. Others are suffering from news stories or being afflicted by news stories of, you know, workers who don't want to go to work because they say it's not safe. You know, Amazon has had some complaints and some organizing against them, et cetera. So Rob and Linda, how would you say businesses should look at how they're behaving during the coronavirus, not how other people are handling their products, but how they are actually manufacturing the products, et cetera, their goods and services during the corona crisis from a marketing standpoint?
You want to tackle that, Rob?
No, yeah, it's critical. And in fact, in a future podcast, we're going to talk exclusively about this problem because, you know, I think it's fair to say that the way the these major brands treat their workers are going to have an incredible impact on the future of their brand. And I think that's a whole other separate podcast. But I think to your point, though, I think tonight and today and tomorrow are pivotal times in every company in America's history to make sure that they're doing what they can to provide the best product at the best price for consumers, because they're going to remember it if they don't.
That's actually a really good point. You know, I was thinking about Amazon and Michael's point around Amazon, because they have had some problems around that. That's one perspective you have on Amazon now, which maybe you've never had before. And from another perspective, what they've been able to do is, if you're ordering from them online, they will give you the most essential, important products first. So they'll get those delivered first, and then they're going to delay the others. Most likely, who knows if they have enough staff to fulfill some of these orders and handle their supply chain. But I think that's kind of one of the ways that they're trying to combat some of these other challenges that they have as well. So it is interesting. They have to look at this problem from many, many different angles and try to figure out, you know, how are we going to balance the good and the bad and the ugly with all of these things that are going on in the world today?
And there you have it. Could success kill your brand? The case has been made, and now it's time for you to give your verdict. Let us know your thoughts at mill.agency/verdict or slide into our DMs on Twitter at Mill Agency. We'll read the best ones in an upcoming episode. Make sure to never miss a mystery by subscribing to us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, iHeart, Spotify, or your podcatcher of choice. For Rob and Linda, I am Michael Graham, and we will see you next time. Until then, the case is closed.